Presenter, Mr. Suri.
Hi, everybody. How are you? I'm just curious at the audience here, how many GIS people are there? And you're leaving. You can't leave. I'm just kidding. how many epidemiologists? Health informatics? Social scientists? Yay. All right. My name is Jonathan Suri. I work at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University. The title of my talk is Role of Place and Space in a Displaced Population's Post-Disaster Recovery, and post-disaster I'm specifically referring to Hurricane Katrina. And I'm utilizing a geographically weighted regression analysis for this study. I have no relationships to disclose. So just to kind of set the stage, the study population that the data set is drawn from is from the Gulf Coast Child and Family Health Study, which is an ongoing longitudinal cohort study of about 1,000 households in Louisiana and Mississippi. We've currently completed 4 waves of interviews. The data for this study are taken from wave 3, and the sample size for this analysis was 595 for various reasons that I'll touch upon. The survey generally includes items of mental and physical health, socioeconomic indicators of recovery, measures such as sense of community, self-efficacy, post-traumatic growth inventory. And throughout time, we've geocoded the location of where everybody has been living pre-Katrina through wave 1, wave 2, wave 3, wave 4, and can track their wave-to-wave movement. And this is just a small little sample. Between 2006 and 2008, we see a generally northwest movement to, in our a lot of cases, to Baton Rouge area. People have moved from this area almost completely further up. And if we look a little more closely, these are the actual pre-Katrina address to their Wave 3 address movement, and we see quite a bit of movement between the Baton Rouge and New Orleans area, whereas some people have kind of left completely. So there are a number of different models of disaster recovery, and all of them point toward the importance of place. One of them is the community resilience model, focused on the adaptive capacities of communities and having those capacities in place so that they can quickly recover to where they were before. The kinship model focuses on processes that were in place before a disaster occurred, so things like social capital. If you have that in place before a disaster, that's going to be useful after to aid in recovery. And also the fully loved root shock theory is focused on the psychology of place and how you identify with a place may impact your recovery. A few definitions. Composition, we're going to be referring to individual level characteristics. Context is the structure through which the individual acts, and for our intents and purposes, that's the neighborhood. And the collective is another term that you hear when you talk about compositional contextual factors. And contextual factors you see a lot in understanding voting behavior. And the collective is the social and historical structure, such as social norms, and we won't actually touch on that today. So I was really interested in knowing, does neighborhood play a role in an individual's perception of their disaster recovery? And does the distance from their pre-Katrina residence and where they are now, in the case it's wave 3, have any role in their recovery? And thirdly, to answer the previous 2 questions, is geographically weighted regression an ideal methodology for understanding if neighborhood does play a role in recovery? So the hypothesis is that an individual's recovery is potentially predetermined by their pre-Katrina neighborhood. And individuals who are further displaced may not be recovering as well as those who are closer back to their original pre-Katrina residence. And finally, that recovery is a spatial process and that there is spatial variability in predictors of recovery. And so this may tell us, by using their pre-Katrina location and the characteristics of their pre-Katrina neighborhood, if that changes over time, the thing that doesn't change are the individual level characteristics, potentially. So this allows a testing of this dark cloud theory. Do those individual level characteristics move with the person, or is it just a function of place? And if the pre-Katrina location context does predict recovery, then we can assume that it's predicted by neighborhood. And if not, we can say that these individual level characteristics are more important. So there, for this study, there was four main kind of buckets of factors that play into disaster recovery. One are the individual level, another is the household level, another are the neighborhood level, and then finally their distance from their pre-Katrina address. So the outcome variable that we used was recovery, and it's a self-reported measure of recovery, and the question is stated exactly as you see there. Generally speaking, how would you characterize your recovery since Hurricane Katrina? Would you say that your situation is better than before, situation is back to where it was, or your situation is worse, or you're unsure if things are still changing? And then I dichotomized that into a recovered or not recovered outcome variable. The individual level variables that we looked at were sense of community, the SF-12 mental health component score, age as a continuous variable, and also the post-traumatic growth inventory and their subscales. The household level variables, we looked at household income, housing stability, and for our intents and purposes, housing stability is either stable or unstable, and is defined as since Hurricane Katrina, the respondent is living or has lived in a self-reported permanent and stable home, excluding trailers, and does not plan on moving in the next year. And then we also looked at individuals and the number of individuals in the household and the number of children in the household. The neighborhood level variables were pulled from census block group data as Z-scores, and we looked at percent renter, percent non-native, percent poverty, percent unemployed, and then also the median household income. And then the distance variable was a Euclidean distance from their pre-Katrina to their wave three residence, and was classified using natural breaks Jenks method by mapping it out in ArcGIS. So there were four models that we wanted to test. The first is just the individual, the next one, and this is a nested regression model. Next, adding in household, next, adding in neighborhood, and then finally adding in distance. Generally, global regression models assume that there's a lack of spatial variation, and that it measures just the average relationships between parameters. And that means that if I'm in California and I run regression and I run it another one in Louisiana and I'm trying to compare these two, the global regression assumes that there's no spatial difference, but the local regression actually takes into account that there may be some spatial variability. So, and the other kind of nice thing about the local model of the geographically weighted regression is that the study space is continuous. You're not constrained by edge effects and by boundaries that are set up by political or administrative boundaries. So this is just a very general, this is just a simple linear model. And it just shows that in the GWR, there's this added XY coordinate. For this actual study, it was a logistic GLM, logit link model, but we won't get into any of that today. An important component of geographically weighted regression is spatial non-stationarity, which means that the data does or does not vary across space. So one reason that it may vary across space is that you have different sampling strategies. Another reason is that, really, there is something different about people's neighborhoods and where they're located. And thirdly, that there's what's called, Fotheringham calls a gross misspecification of reality, which means that you're missing something. In your global model, you are missing a key component that is not explained within your model that may account for that spatial variability. So essentially, it runs a global regression, it runs a local regression at each of your data points, and each data point is each of the respondents' households at the time of pre-Katrina. And then it tests to see whether the global and local models differ. And then finally, it runs a Monte Carlo simulation of about 1,000 variations to see whether there really is anything spatially different. So these are the results, and I'll kind of walk you through this a little bit here. First of all, the individual, household, neighborhood, and distance models were all significantly better than the global model. So the locals were better than the globals. When we look just at the global model in general, we see sense of community, mental health, age, and a subscale of the post-traumatic growth inventory are all significant. Mental health, we see that for each point increase in the mental health score, or each 10-point increase in the mental health score, we see a 20% increase in likelihood of a self-reported recovery. And age, for every increase in year and age, you're less likely to, 10% less likely to say that you're recovered. When we add in the household level variables, we see that income and housing stability become very significant and remain so throughout the adding of the, for the individual and household model. Looking at the test for spatial non-stationarity, we see that the spiritual change variable, unemployment, and the distance moved are actually not significant in the model, but significantly different across space. So there's something about those that isn't accounted for in the global model. And to further test this, since we use a nested regression model, we did a log likelihood test and also looking at the AIC and found out that the individual and household model really is the best. And that adding in neighborhood and also distance isn't any better of a model. And this is one of the cool things about the GWR is that you can map out the parameter estimate. So that's what this is. And using an inverse distance weighted function to interpolate a surface, you can see a trending of, in this case, spiritual change to the east. And this is Louisiana and this is Mississippi. And then you can see, as far as unemployment, you see a trending toward the west. And then also, looking at the distance from their pre-Katrina home, you can see a trending toward the west as well. So essentially, we found out that the local regression models were much better than the global models. The best model overall was individual and household, and significant predictors of recovery were sense of community, age, and mental health, which is nothing really surprising. And finally, housing stability and income as well. And the variables which showed significant spatial variability were spiritual change, unemployment, and distance. So to go back to our original questions, using geographically weighted regression, we found no major difference or influence of the neighborhood variables that were included in this study, but found that the compositional variables were far more important, the individual and household level. Distance from pre-Katrina home, not really important predictor of recovery. And finally, is GWR useful? It is, and it's something that many of you might have seen now, it's added into the ESRI products. It's gaining a little more traction. The models that the ArcGIS can handle are pretty limited at this point, so there are other options out there, including the GWR 3.0 by Fotheringham, which they developed their own software, as well as a SATA program, and there are lots of programs in R. So I'd like to thank all of the NCDP staff, Dr. Abramson, Paul Brand Ralph, Yunsu Park, Tasha Staling, our Louisiana Mississippi field team, and our study participants, and also our funders. Thank you.
All right, so as promised, we do have about 25 minutes for questions. And so go ahead and ask questions of any of the presenters. Yeah, just the ones that HRSA manages and keeps track of.
Okay. So my second question is, you showed the community health centers that have maternal child health homes. How did you collect that data from those clinics?
Okay, so a little clarification. That was actually whether the local health department. So local health, whether the local health departments provided the those two services or not, MCH home visits and prenatal care. So that information came from NCHO's National Profile of Local Health Department study of 2008. Other questions?
What are the findings about individuals and households going to do to improving disaster preparedness? How do you project it into the future?
That's a good question. Everything comes back to allocating resources and empowering communities, really. If communities, especially community-based organizations that are locally based, can supply and connect directly with individuals and help them with their preparedness, that's going to make a bigger difference from the individual empowerment standpoint.
I have a related question to that, actually. I'm just curious who you think your audience is to share these results. In addition to researchers who might want to do weighted or spatial analysis more often, I'm just curious if you think you want to show this to CDC and HHS as they're building their community resiliency strategy, ASPR, and the CDC grant, if you want to build that into that system. Or, but who do you see as your audience that's going to really use this for policy?
Another good question. At this point, probably localities are going to have the best use of it. This is such a small sample size, especially for us to really kind of understand this. And again, this is very location specific. So taking this to Louisiana, like the Louisiana Recovery Authority, or local organizations and foundations that are interested in these type of topics are probably going to be the most beneficial. And we've also tried to do another study where we're looking at actual objective assessments of neighborhood and seeing if that also plays into indigenous recovery as well. So, localities are going to be best suited, I think.
Just to follow up on that, if something that we've actually thought about doing is taking the Jonathan Parker Center is taking the FEMA individual assistance application data, which covers all the people who have requested FEMA assistance for a variety of things. And if you're able to geocode that data much more quickly than FEMA makes it available, I'd say, as it's sort of in real time, you'd be able to not only track the movement of displaced populations, you'd be able to know something about what their resource needs were based on their pre-disaster community characteristics as well. So I think that what Jonathan is displaying has a great deal of utility for emergency response as well as preparedness and resiliency.
Yeah, so it'd be another way of helping vulnerable populations. Yeah. I mean, I can see it at all levels of government. That's why I'm asking, because I think these types of GIS spatial analysis is very helpful, and I'm just encouraging you to think broadly in your office.
Okay. Other questions?
I have a question for Dr. Mark. In regard to the service-oriented architecture, how do the NN Connect and private sector software like Carifex, do they kind of provide that bridge of service-oriented architecture, or is that something else?
No, it's not something else at all. He's referring to Connect, which is the open source software that's been developed as part of the nationwide health information network strategy that the federal government has been pursuing. That product is inherently a service-oriented product and builds upon a set of standards and specifications that are squarely in the SOA world. So those products are exactly the types of implementations that I was talking about, just for a particular purpose, which is the Connect software is essentially is for communication between networks, so between whole communities.
Thank you.
I also think that local is to compare and contrast the services provided by the health department and the federally qualified health centers that will help us for future funding. The healthcare reform, there's a big fear with the health department that what the future of public health departments when through healthcare reform comprehensive services are going to be available to the federally qualified health centers.
Right.
Would that be considered a duplication of services that health departments provide and lose the future cut or lose the funding for the program? So my question is, how would the health department use GAF services to validate and prove that yes, we do provide different services, not duplicating the community services centers, and that would qualify us to get continued federal funding and state funding?
So very good question. And drawing upon my other work that I presented, on a survey that we conduct, economic surveillance, budget cuts, workforce reduction, and all that, my understanding is that local health departments actually work with these community health centers. And a lot of times, so I, in analysis of the qualitative data from the economic surveillance survey, three waves that we have conducted so far, I've learned that local health departments are very cognizant of the resources they have, and so they put their resources where there is no duplication of services. If there is a clear duplication of services, they end up, particularly in these times of, limited budgets and all that, many local health departments actually rely on those community health centers, so that their coordination is often documented in, for example, through various surveys like we even ask in our big study profile of local health departments. We ask of local health departments, who do you work with? Who do you partner with? And so they are actually, there are ways of documenting those. But if there were clearly like were duplications, I can see how your point is really valid. Don? So we do have questions for a few more questions, time for a few more questions, but before we lose anybody, I would want to request you all to fill the evaluation forms, please, before you leave. They are right on the back table. So let's take a few more questions.
Told that people with mental health problems live on average 25-year shorter than the average length of life of the population. And it occurs to me that there might be mapping methods, GIS mapping methods, that could identify shortfalls in making the full range of services available to people with mental health problems aimed at lengthening their lifespan.
Yes.
Is that a good question? Is it appropriate?
It's appropriate question. I don't know specifically who would like to take it on. I would try it if nobody took it on. But does anyone from the audience want to take this question on, or anything that you know that can shed light to this, or one of our panelists? Well, one development that I want to share with you all is that one of our very senior persons from NACHO, a senior advisor from NACHO, actually just left NACHO a couple of months ago and became the director of these community health centers in the Western region. Her name is Cindy Phillips, and she was very well aware of these kind of issues. Coexistence of community health centers and prioritizations of certain services and not so much for the others. So that's one thing I wanted to share, that the people are actually aware of these issues. One thing that I stumbled upon in my analysis of three waves of our economic surveillance survey question, there was an open-ended question. Well, in face of budget cuts, how do you prioritize your services? And one of the things that became like an emergent theme was that local health departments, identified which services are duplicated as one, and secondly, as public health professionals, they identify which are some of the services where you can't really abandon. And mental health services was one of those services that was named by many, that even if they had to cut some services, like reduce the number of inspections, or responding to issues rather than preventing things from happening. Mental health was services was one of those who provided those services were trying to keep those, and some other services were on the list where people were services for underprivileged people. So I don't know if I can offer more than that, but that's my kind of speculative answer. Other questions are, I'm having fun.
You had a slide that I think you called it. Showing
membership. Yeah.
I didn't quite understand. It was showing the level of involvement of health departments with NACHO.
Right. So that was, So NACHO has obviously we represent all the local health departments in the country, and there are some local health departments that are more actively involved, and one of the main indicators of their involvement is that they pay their dues on time. That's obviously is a so in this one we just taking the most recent data we've shown the local health departments in teal that were dues paying members as opposed to those who were either not on time or did not pay their dues and did not want to put it in that particular way, but yeah, that's what it was. All right, other questions? Wonderful, thank you very much. You've been very good audience, and thank you very much for all the speakers. Really good for, you know, making this session really a success. Thanks a lot.